Good morning. Irving, I hope you're feeling better. I am here in the middle of dealing with the question of the requirement of burial and the flip side of it, the prohibition of delaying the burial, what's called halanat hamet. We mentioned that last time we spoke about the pasuk that is the source of it, the pasuk that actually speaks about a person who was killed by Beit Din. The pasuk says, "Lo talim nivlato al ha'etz." Don't leave his body hanging because harugei Beit Din require tzliya. Don't leave it hanging there. Ki kavul ki kverenu bayom, bury him on that day. Ki kivelat elokim talui, because it's a disgrace to God when he's hanging there. Velo tetamet avmatcha asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha machala. So we saw that there's lo talin. Do not leave the body lying and not buried. And there is kavur ki kverenu bayom. Ideally, the kavura should be within the day of the death. In other words, if the person dies during the day, it should be buried at least till the following morning, and ideally before Shkia. If a person dies at night, again, that day is considered until Alot HaShachar of the next day. And therefore, as we find in certain places, there is a preference to bury yet at night. We mentioned, however, that since the pasuk says al ha'etz, leaving it hanging, leave the body hanging on the tree, we learn from there reference to the broad field of burial and refraining from halana, that it applies specifically where there's an element of disgrace. But if the delay, the delaying of the burial is for the respect or the honor of the met, kvod met, then it's permissible. Giving some examples, one example is that you wait for certain family members to come in from somewhere far away, and another is sometimes where immediate burial would be in a very small, limited levaya, as opposed to a respected, larger levaya, where you would wait if you waited a little longer.
Those are considered, it's not exactly a halakhic topic, but it's relating to this topic. If someone passes away at home, it's not in the hospital, what is the actual procedure here? What is the first call one should make, and or legally, what's actually involved here?
First thing a person has to do is call a doctor to just verify death. In other words, nobody can do anything until there is a medical declaration of death.
Is that any doctor or a specially designated doctor for this purpose? I mean,
to the best of my knowledge, any qualified doctor is allowed to. But I don't know. I definitely know that family doctors have done it here in Efrat. So I'm assuming that any qualified doctor can, and not.
If it's in the house, it has to be police first. You have to call the police first. If it's in the house, you have to call the police first.
So here, Avi's touching. We spoke about that. Here we touch a very touchy issue. Now, theoretically, you're supposed to call the police, right? Because the police have to come and investigate that there was no foul play and declare that the death was okay. On the other hand, that often leads into unwanted issues of autopsies. And therefore, what is in many cases done...
And Tzevet Mada can... There is nifta.
Yeah, there are people, there's the people in Tzitei Mada who are qualified. But again, if a person died, you don't necessarily have to call Mada, you call a doctor. And if it's an emergency that you're trying to save the person, you'll call Mada. If it's a situation where it's very clear the person's dead, you just need the official declaration, then you can call a doctor. But in any event, what might be best to do is to call the Chevra Kadisha and then call the police. This allows the Chevra Kadisha, in certain cases, to simply innocently take the body. And in other cases, simply their presence and their involvement and familiarity with all the details helps prevent all kinds of issues that are not necessary with the police and autopsies. So having at least the Chevra Kadisha involved can be preferable in that kind of situation. Okay, now getting back to our issue, okay? So there we spoke about lo tamin and kavorti kvereno, when it should be done. We also spoke about who has some kind of degradation of who has the requirement. And whoever has that requirement of kavura also has the prohibition upon him that if he doesn't do it and he leaves the body there, he transgresses the issur of lo tamin. At the end of the class, you can expand on it further, Bruce, to clarify exactly what you wanted, but you raised the issue of delaying the burial for the purpose of bringing a body to be buried in Eretz Israel. Right? If the question is whether that is permissible, the answer is very clearly yes, because the aspect of burial in Eretz Israel is something that is desirable for the met, and it's therefore considered kavod hamet. As we said, anything that falls into the category of the respectability of the dead, kavod hamet, it is permissible to delay a burial for that purpose. In the past, this was a much more complex issue, and in certain circumstances also touched on other halachic aspects, embalming a body or something of that sort, because in most cases it required a lengthy trip, not necessarily in ideal conditions, as far as keeping the body from heating up and starting to decompose. And definitely they didn't have things that we have today, refrigeration or even, you know, ice, the amount of ice that could be maintained to keep the body from decay. So there were other issues that applied. However, we still find, both in Tanakh and in Chazal, that bodies were brought to Eretz Israel or brought to certain places for burial. You know, the most classic is Yaakov Avinu, who's brought from Mitzrayim to burial in Eretz Israel. There's some kind of embalmment that takes place in Mitzrayim. There are issues of traveling, moving the dead, and other stories in Rishi, whether it's with Sarah, that seemingly she dies in Beersheba and is brought to Hebron to be buried. There is an issue that is questioned. Why is Rachel not brought to burial in Maarat HaMachpelah? Right? And the answers are usually around the issue because she died at birth, so there was issues of her bleeding and disgrace, and therefore it was preferable to bury her where she died. But again, the issue of moving the dead for his respect is given there. We also find in Chazal, find stories of Amoraim who were brought from Bavel to Eretz Israel for Kavura. Now, that required, I don't know exactly how they did that, because how they avoid serious decomposition and smell and whatnot, I don't know exactly how they did that, or was it done that they first let the body decompose in burial in Bavel and then brought up only the bones? I don't know. And to this day, it's very common that not only are bodies brought to burial in Eretz Yisrael, but in certain cases, people who were buried in Chutz Laaretz, their bones are then transferred later on, different reasons, for reburial in Eretz Yisrael. So that practically it's done and it is perceived as kavod hamet, and therefore there's no prohibition. In modern times, most of the side problems don't even really exist. In other words, in most cases, the transfer of a body anywhere in Chutz Laaretz to burial in Eretz Yisrael would be done by plane. But when it's transferred by plane, during flight time, the body is in the cargo, which is not a section of the plane that is kept warm or anything. It's so cold that it's better than normative refrigeration as far as maintaining the quality of the body. Additionally, in many cases, they put in ice, it's chemical ice, to keep the coffin, the box in which the body is being transferred, cold, so that the mate really doesn't get affected by that. One case that I can think of where there was an issue, it wasn't because of the transfer, but it was an issue because there was a delay of 2 days or something like that until anything could be done in the United States, because you get these crazy weekends and things like that that you can't get OKs and you can't get things going. Today, it's a little better. There are all kind of arrangements most of the Chaver Kadishas have with the states. But as I know of a particular case, the burial was delayed a bit. It was Yom Tov also, but all kind of other issues it caused a certain initial decay, but that even there was maintained with ice and so on. So today, that should not even be a problem from that perspective. Yes, please.
Is there a conflict between kavod for the mate and kavod to the family who would like to be there? So if you have to weigh the two factors, which one would take precedence?
Okay. As a whole, there shouldn't be. In other words, the basic perspective of halacha is that it is kvod hamet to wait for family members. However, if a person says, I want to be buried immediately, right? Do not wait for family members. Then I think that the desire of the mate will take precedence. There's a famous story, but it's not exactly on this level. It's a famous story in reference to Rav Shach's wife. When Rav Shach's wife passed away, his son was living at that point in the United States, teacher in Ramaz, and wanted to come in for the Levaya. And Rav Shach refused to wait till he'd make it in. And the Levaya was before he made it in. But Rav Shach's reasoning was not there, was not kavod hamet, but he felt that it would create a bitul Torah. Because, I don't know why he thought that, why the yeshiva couldn't continue learning because the Rosh Yeshiva was an aninut, I don't know. But in any event, for issues of bitul Torah, he refused to wait. It created a lot of tensions between father and son for many, many years.
Could a child today say, my parent has dementia and I'd rather it be done this way? I mean, at what point does that play a role these days? It's so common. So,
again, I think that as long as the person in other issues is perceived as the one who's making the decisions, then this would be okay. The minute the person is not in a state of mind that we can in any serious way relate to their opinion or their position, then it usually legally passes on to the family member, whoever the family member who has the right making decisions for that person would have to make the decision in this case. In most cases, I think that if even a person who, if it's not severe dementia, a person has dementia but shows real interest of being buried immediately, I think that, you know, there's an issue of respect and the family should automatically just accept it. But then that has to be weighed under the conditions and what level of intellectual capacity we attain to this person, and therefore decide. But as I said, as a whole, most people, first of all, truly, when asked, will express that they'd rather wait their burial for the family members to come. And the Chazal's assumption is that that is the reality.
No, I had a friend in the States, and his elderly father, who was widowed, was living with a non-Jewish woman. And when he passed away, he had wanted to be buried with her. But the kids were like, no, we're going to bury him back in a Jewish cemetery with mom. And they trumped the wishes of the father because they didn't think it was reasonable.
There's already a more complex issue because what the person wants is against halacha.
Oh, that is against halacha. Okay.
That to be buried again. No, nobody's going to allow for a non-Jew to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. So his non-Jewish wife has to be buried in a non-Jewish cemetery. That halachically is not acceptable. So a person can do it, but there is a place here to. It's interesting. I don't know. You have to see the details why or how, not from the halachic point of view, but from the legal point of view. How the children were able to overrule their father's desire. I don't know what the details are. That's something, you know, has to do with the legal decisions in the United States. I don't know what's behind it. Halachically, as I said, in a situation like this, what the father is asking is something as opposed to halacha. Issues where a person says, don't do or do so and so in reference to my burial, that's against halacha. Simply negate what the person
means.
Okay.
And the question, I want to be buried here instead of Eretz Yisrael, that they can choose where they want to be buried?
Yeah, I think if a person says, I don't want to be transferred for whatever reason to Eretz Yisrael, I don't think that you could force him, because even though there's a milah, something positive in being buried in Eretz Yisrael.
Well, let's say he's a parent in America, and all the kids are here. They say they want to be buried in America.
That's what I'm saying. If a person chooses to be buried, prefers to be buried in Chutz La'aretz, I don't think there's anything halachically wrong, right? There are plenty of very, very good Jews who are buried in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, that's not something that's going against halacha. And even though there's a certain stature, a certain milah, being buried in itself, the person for practical reasons.
That was an argument we had with my mother. We said, you're not going to have much choice in the matter, so we might as well buy the plot. She didn't want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And we said, you're not going to have much choice in the matter. Said, all right, she agreed. I guess that was wrong.
I don't know. No, it wasn't wrong. You know, if she agreed, she agreed.
She agreed, but it was for you.
There would have been nothing wrong if she insisted and you buried her in Chutz La'aretz. But she agreed. There's nothing wrong with it. Right. From here, we move on a little bit and relate to the latter part of the pasuk. Latter part of the pasuk, it says, the lo tetamed admatcha, you should not make the land impure, but here it's not talking about, I think I mentioned already last week, not talking about the usual term of tumah impurity, but here it's a desecration of the sanctity of the land, which God is giving you as inheritance. There are two understandings in the pasuk. Most opinions, and definitely the Rambam seems to understand, that this latter part of the pasuk is an explanation. Why are we prohibited from delaying the burial, and why are we required to bury immediately? Because such a delay would be a desecration of the sanctity of life. And according to that opinion, simply that, even though there's no issue of Eretz Yisrael, when you're in Chutz La'aretz, But that rationale carries over to applying the prohibition and the Isser of Halanat HaMeit in Chutz La'aretz as well. The Ramban, Nachmanides, in his Perush of the Torah, claims or states that the Lo Titameh Et Admatcha is an additional prohibition in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, wherever one is in the world, there is a requirement to strive for burial as soon as possible, preferable on the day of death. There is a prohibition of halanat hameit, of delaying the burial. And in Eretz Yisrael, besides those two things, the Isser and the Aseh, there's an additional Isser, an additional prohibition of Lo Titameh Et Admatcha. And the, at least Rav Tikhochinsky understands the Ramban that not only is it a question of counting Isuri, how many Isuri, how bad is your action if you refrain from burying, but he also says that there might be a difference, reference to who is included in this aspect. Because the first part of the pasuk, the halanat hameit, the requirement of kvurat hameit, applies to the reference to the meit himself, to the dead himself. And therefore, it's an issue of kvod hameit. According to many opinions, that does not apply to a non-Jew. In other words, the Isser of halanat hameit, the requirement of immediate burial, applies to a Jew and not to a non-Jew. However, the Isser of the Lo Titameh Et Admatcha, that is not something that is a function of the status of the Beit, but rather a question of Kedushat Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the fact that there is a dead body hanging around desecrates the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, regardless if it's a Jew or a non-Jew. So, Rav Tikhochinsky suggests that not only is it a question of there being two lavim in Eretz Yisrael, but also it expands to whom a prohibition applies, and the requirement to bury immediately also a non-Jew.
Why would the kavod to the met not extend to the non-Jew pretty much the same way?
Okay. The question is, the kavod hamet, where does it stem from? If it stems from the fact that any human being is a tzelem Elohim, then it would certainly or should certainly apply to a non-Jew as well as a Jew. And therefore, the general requirement of burial definitely would apply to a non-Jew as well. But we did say that there is opinions or there is a position that says that you can receive halal from the body of a mate, and therefore you'll refrain from burying it. But even assuming that you ignore the aspect, there may be an element of burial which would include a goy. However, there's also another element that is part of the kavod hameit, and that is the kedushat haguf, the sanctity of the body, because of the Jewish soul that was in it, the mitzvot that it fulfilled, and so on, which sanctifies the body. That status only applies to a Jew. It does not apply to a non-Jew. So it depends how you would look at it. What is the root of this prohibition? There is one more level in the issue of halanat hameit, and that is the level of Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Bava Kamma mentions several issues in reference to the uniqueness of Yerushalayim. In what ways Yerushalayim is unique and different than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara Bava Kamma has, there's a Tosefta that even has more. In any event, one of the things that is mentioned is Ein Melinim Et Hamet B'Yerushalayim. We don't leave a dead in Yerushalayim over night or a past day of the death. There is a natural question of if there is a general Isser, as we spoke about, Halanat HaMeit, then what is it that's unique about Yerushalayim that there is a special halacha of Ein Melinim Et HaMeit B'Yerushalayim? So one possibility touches on the fact that as far as the general Isser of Halanat HaMeit, we mentioned that where it's the kavod hamet, then we may delay the burial. Somebody till relatives come, till you can have a proper levaya, bringing the mate from one place to another, whatever other considerations. But in Yerushalayim, there may be a halacha of Ein Melinim Et HaMeit, don't leave the Meit in Yerushalayim, even where it fulfills an element of Kavod HaMeit. That's one possibility of the uniqueness of this halacha of Ein Melinim Et HaMeit. And therefore, in that case, it has to be kept in mind. As far as Yerushalayim, even when there are other considerations, still there's a preference to bury the mate on the day of death. I'm holding questions specifically because we have to get to a practical aspect to conclude, and then I'll have the questions. Rav Tikhachevsky raises this issue and then suggests several other possibilities of what the uniqueness of the Isser in Yerushalayim is. And one is also an issue of the extent of financial expenses. In other words, if the burial immediately is more expensive, cost money for some reason, over a delay, then in other places that would not be required, where in Yerushalayim it might be required. But yeah, he suggests other, he expands it in other possible ways. We're talking about natural abortion and the fetus, the burial, is there an Easter of Halanat HaMeit? There may not be in reference to other places, but there is in reference to Yerushalayim. There may be an issue in reference to burying bones. In other words, whether bones that were found out in the field or a body that is being transferred, a body that's already decayed, and now it's what's being transferred, its bones. Because, the Isser of Kavod HaMeit applies when there is a body. Because that is the image of God. However, when it's bones, it doesn't exist. On the other hand, when it says the prohibition of Halanat HaMeit in Yerushalayim, that's a function, again, of the sanctity of Yerushalayim, and therefore that might apply to bones as well, and not only to a full body. So he raises several possibilities. In any event, we do find that the Gemara already, Sefta, mentions that Havlanat HaMeit in Yerushalayim has a unique status even over Eretz Yisrael, or more so over Chutzlaretz. However, as I said, let me just finish this and then I'll ask questions because I think that it's important to put it into category. However, we have to realize that halachically, the definition of Yerushalayim is the area of Yerushalayim that was walled during the time of the Mikdash. Right? So there are some discussions, Kuczynski himself has his opinions of where the walls were, and he gives those parameters in his book. There are today all kind of other slightly different views, whether because of archaeological things that were done or other sources, to the exact placing of the walls of Yerushalayim. It does not technically, at least, apply to what is defined as Yerushalayim today, as far as the municipality, outside of the area of the walls. However, even though that doesn't apply, the minhag, if the Chevra Kedisha in Yerushalayim is, in most cases, to be more particular about Havlanat HaMeit, as an extension of the Yerushalayim in the walls. But definitely there is place to distinguish, and even the Yerushalayim Chevra Kedisha, in certain circumstances where it's Kavod HaMeit, will agree to do Havlanat HaMeit for Kavod HaMeit, as long as it's not in the walled area of Yerushalayim. Okay, now questions. Yes.
So today there are so many questionable, you know, mixed marriage situations, and when people come in Aliyah, the government goes to great lengths to ascertain the status of the person. Would they do the same thing with a burial? I mean, if someone is his name is Cohen and his wife dies and everyone thinks they're Jewish, but does the Chevra Kedisha or the powers that be try to determine, is it really a Jewish person they're about to bury? And how would they...
The general answer, again, we're not talking about burial at the moment, but the general answer to your question is yes. Are they as particular as other issues? Because in other issues, then there's questions of, you know, the identity of children afterwards and so on. In burial, that's less. I think that they're probably less stringent about it. And there are also all kind of ways that they avoid it. Even if it's in what's officially called a Jewish cemetery, they'll put him into a certain section and make divisions.
There's a couple. The couple want to get buried together, and it's
okay. So again, there are issues, and it's come up. All kind of legal issues have come up on that. But as a whole, the answer is yes, that they are or they try. But I don't think that the extent of the particularity of it is as great as finding a living person.
So today someone can't try to say, clearly they're Jewish, because look, their mother was buried in this Jewish cemetery here in Israel. That's not used as, therefore, as a clear proof.
I can't say for sure. Again, I can't say for sure, and it may be, because there the Beit Din would have to really start investigating as to how particular those who run the cemetery, how particular they are. In certain places, you'll find Chevra Kedisha, they're much more particular about it. And in the far extreme, you have some of these kibbutzim that outright bury non-Jews with. And that's sometimes the solution, not Jews, that they're buried in these cemeteries. So that kind of cemetery would not be any proof. The Beit Din, who also have access to the data and so on, would probably take particular or certain cases of Batei Kvarot as at least an indication to Judaism. I don't think it would be a foolproof in any case, where other Batei Kvarot would probably be meanings.
When you say Chevra Kedisha, each community has its own, or are they under sort of the auspices of the Rabbanut in some way with consistent rules that they have to follow?
Each community has its own Chevra Kedisha. I think that the Rabbanut has some kind of broad overseeing and setting certain basic criteria, but definitely you will see that there are different customs in different places that the Chevra Kedisha sets. Okay. Any other questions in reference to the halacha of halanat hamet and the requirement to bury in immediacy in general, Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, etc.? Okay. If there are no further questions, then we'll move on to the next topic. Next topic, I'm not going to get into the details of it, but I think that at least an awareness.
I do have a question.
Yes, Avi.
The practice today where they do the double decker burials, burials in the wall. Is it a better, what's preferable? Bury it? There's all kind of combinations today.
Look, I'll try to get to the, maybe touch some of these things in reference to Kapura. But when we talk about the Kavura itself, but let's put it this way. All the forms of Kavura that are done today are basically halachically acceptable. Even the apartment buildings that are being built in certain places, right? Because it's done in such a way that there's earth and land, it's technically considered kvura bakarka. Are there those that might be a more ideal as opposed to others? That might be the case.
I know that if I want a certain amount of money to be buried in the ground as opposed to being buried in the wall, that's an interesting thing to say.
Again, it's because people. There is, in other words, the concept of kavura is bekarka, okay? And people feel more comfortable with that kind of a burial bekarka. But let's remember, Chazal's burial was, in its structure, initially a bait was put on some kind of slab or some straight place in a cave. And sometime later, after the decay, they would collect the bones and move the bones into a container, into a different cave, which these containers with bones would sit in. So that, technically, that's no different than the burials that are done into mountains, to the wall. It's just a question of what direction you're putting them into the ground. Ground burials today, where in most places it requires the two-level burial, have their own problem. Because there's a halacha that you don't bury two metim in one kever. So how do you define a kever? Okay. So each thing has its issues. Each thing has its problems. But that's okay. We'll try to touch a little bit on the issue as a whole. Talk about the actual burial. But again, I think that be aware that this is not being done randomly by people in different places. This is being done with serious rabbinic okays to use these forms of kavura. Yes, you hear those who want dafka this and those who want dafka that. Whether it's because it's the same people who be machmir about everything and anything just for the sake of chumra, or it's people who are just more comfortable with a particular form of chumra or not. Okay. But I think that, and it's therefore also a very much of a subjective and personal decision. A person wants to put out more money to have a chumra that they're more comfortable with. Okay. The next topic in a few minutes we have that I want to touch is the topic of the tahara. Now, I'm not going to get into all the details of the tahara, but just to have a general understanding of what it is and what it entails. We ask ourselves the essence of what tahara is all about. The essence is that we see the situation, or we compare the situation to a person coming before some important person or before a king. Other expressions are like the person prepares himself for Shabbat and Yom Tov. In other words, in the same way as a person before some special event, be it Shabbat Yom Tov, be it before some kind of reception of a king or something like that, will make sure to bathe, to clean themselves, to appear respectful and no dirt and so on. In time, again, today, because both overall hygiene situations and even with sick people, the overall care to maintain cleanliness in hospitals and so on, we may not see it. If you think, go back not that many years, go back 200 years, definitely longer than that, you could have situations where people before their death were somewhat, could not bathe. Bathing meant going outside and often in cold situations and so on. And bodies would be dirty, be disrespectful, and so on. The overall concept of the tahara is to prepare the body to be brought to burial in a form that is respectful, that if the person was living, he would appear like this before a king, before Shabbat and Yom Tov, because here also the person is going to appear before Melech Malchei HaMalachim, is coming to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we said, that there is this concept of a connection that exists still between the soul and the body, so we do see it on some level as the body is still appearing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, what is done initially is a process of cleansing and cleaning the body. The body should be physically clean. That includes washing all parts of the body, washing the hair. As a matter of fact, the washing process has a double element. First, the body is washed with water, then they use soaps, kind of cleansing materials. Out of a certain sense of respectability, there's an order that you first the right side of the body, then the left side of the body. But there is a process of cleansing the outside external elements of the body. That's called the rechitza. It has two stages, as I said. One is a general washing off, and then the other is soaping and cleaning it.
Obviously, it's men for men and women for women.
That's any question. That's out of respect for the body. Even though it's mentioned in the halacha that you wash the body, you do it through a sheet, you do it, the body is somewhat covered, but still, without any question, that's a given.
If the person had passed away from some communicative disease, is there a different procedure?
Okay, so again, that falls into, I won't touch on it today, but circumstances where tahara isn't or isn't fully done, depending on the circumstances. I just want to give the general overview of what it is. There are also all kind of customs of things that kedusha and tefillah that are said along with or before and between the different stages of washing the body. It's a certain sense of respectability, a certain sense of kedusha, And the sense that the person is going before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore we're praying for his well-being. There is also a second level of cleanliness, what's called the Bdika Nikui Pnimi, basically cleaning out all kind of wastes that are in the body. It's done through cleaning the anal opening, which after death, again, I do not have any practical experience. I don't know this from practical experience. I know this just from reading in books, but after death, the muscles are not as taut. And therefore, the ability to clean there is much easier. And they clean with rags till no dirt continues coming out. No dirt, there's no smell. And this is a sense that the inner part of the body is also clean and respected. So that there are two levels of cleaning. One is external and one is internal, to remove all kinds of elements of dirt that are on the body or in the body to make the body more respectful. The last stage of the tahara, there is an issue of pouring 9 kabim of water. 9 kabim in water is considered in many cases an equivalent to tefillah. Definitely as far as tumah of keri, tumah of any kind of sperm that came out, the tisha kabim is considered sufficient. As a matter of fact, some people may have been aware of it. There were several people who expressed it, and it was written in many different places. At the height of the corona, there were rabbinic, even not only Ethereum, but there were actually a preference and suggestions and recommendations that people not go to the mikveh, to an Erev of Yom Kippur, to dip in the mikveh, but rather run water on themselves, tisha kabim, which would be sufficient for that removal of the tumat keri that applies in, which is the main purpose of the tevila. So pouring tisha kabim on a body is seen as something that is equivalent to tefillah in the mikvah. These are the primary stages of the tahara that are done, and then after that they get to the point of putting on the tachrichim, the special clothing that are put on the mat before burial. So again, this is just a very limited synopsis of the components of the tahara. I'll get into a few more details, not so much details of how it's done, but halachic details, like what Bruce asked, certain circumstances when tahara is not done, and so on, in Yirtzeh Hashem, in next week's class. Are there any questions as to the overall view of things that I mentioned here?
And again, when doubts, if the person is Jewish, you just do this procedure.
This procedure is not harmful, not a problem if the person is not Jewish. They may, if there's a question about his Judaism, they may refrain from saying some of the things that are said. But I would assume that, again, once it's determined that the person is recognized as a Jew for the legitimacy of being buried in a Jewish cemetery, then we would also take that same recognition as far as the
No, but that could certainly be a while. A person dies, you got to deal with it now. And they're married to a Jew, and they live in a country where there's a very high intermarriage rate. And you don't know. Just don't know until it's investigated. But in the meantime, the body's in front of you.
Again, in most communities, there is different forms of how they keep track, definitely amongst living people, of who is or isn't Jewish.
No, I mean, a reform community, who knows? Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying that there aren't issues where it will come up. Yes, a reformed person who is coming now to have a Orthodox burial, their issue might come up. There usually are. It's not that difficult to track down. You know, is it? First question is this person a convert or not a convert? If it's convert, then it's a reformed conversion. You basically can treat it as non-Jew. If it's
Israel, there's only Orthodox burials.
Was that?
In Israel, there's only an Orthodox burial by and large. But, and people come from all over the world here. And
I can't tell you, Bruce, exactly how or what the Chevra Kedishas do in reference to these particular cases. I'm sure that they have their procedures. I've never really gotten into it. But what I'm saying is that at least a general awareness is not that difficult. You can usually, with a few questions and here and there, find out if a person is at least perceivably Jewish or not. And as I said, I think that they will be less particular about the details of it in reference to Kavura than as far as giving a person a full status of a Jew, that he can marry other Jews and so on. And complications in
the also, so the Jew is intermarried. Do they lose the right to be buried in this Orthodox cemetery?
Not necessarily. There are all kind of issues of mumar. The question is what you would define as a mumar, and so on. Those things do affect, but even then, usually they can be buried in a Jewish cemetery. They'll just have them sort of in a corner or some other area section. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
David's
you.
David's waiting. So wish you all a Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Rav David.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. I have to share a screen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one second here.